This is a production of Cornell University.
So now that everyone has taken their seat and it seems like we have a quorum, I'd like to call the first official open meeting of the University Assembly's 2016-2017 academic session to order. So I asked Vishal if he'll call the order or do a roll call to see if everyone's here.
Edward Baptist. Jordan Berger.
Here.
Linda Kopman. Mary Ann DeRuth.
Here.
Kevin Fitch.
Yeah, he's excused. Sorry.
Martin Hesch.
Here.
Rebecca Hurd.
She's excused.
Robert Howard. Gabe Kaufman.
Here.
Jeremy Cruiser. Ellis Lowe.
He's out in the hall taking a call.
Sorry.
Mitchell McBride.
Here.
Nate Rogers.
Here.
Ulysses Smith.
Excused.
And Charles Van Loan.
Here.
And Rena Winarto.
Here.
Okay, that's it.
Okay, thank you very much. So the next item on the agenda is the call for late additions. Are there any late additions to the agenda? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to ask that we move into approval of the minutes from the August 30th meeting. There's been a motion to approve.
Second.
Has the motion been seconded? Is there any dissent?
Yeah, but I just said
there is dissent.
I can't motion anything, but for the attendance, Charlie Van Loan and Linda Kopman were absent, but I didn't incorporate that into the minutes. So those are the only two changes I've had.
Is there a motion to reflect that in the minutes?
So moved.
Okay. Is there any dissent? Okay. Seeing none, the minutes have been amended to reflect the changes Michelle made. Are there any other objections to the August 30th minutes? There's been a motion to approve.
Second.
The motion has been seconded. Is there any dissent? Okay. Seeing none, the minutes are approved. So now on to the May 3rd minutes. Are there any, does anyone have anything they'd like to add to the minutes for May 3rd?
Edward Baptist is present, not absent, so that was my mistake.
Okay. Is there a motion to incorporate that into the May 3rd minutes?
So moved, yeah.
Okay, is there any dissent? Okay, seeing none, that addition has been made into the May 3rd minutes. Are there any other amendments to the minutes? There's been a motion to approve. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, I'm going to ask that we approve the minutes by unanimous consent. Is there any dissent? No. Okay, the minutes are approved. That was fine. So now we're going to move into committee reports. I'm going to give a brief report on the executive committee and what the executive committee did over the summer, and then I'm going to ask the chairs of the other committees to briefly discuss staffing. I don't expect committees to have been meeting. The executive committee addressed two issues over the summer. The first issue was whether or not Pilar Thompson was still a UA member. We heard back from council's office yesterday, and council's office basically interpreted the charters of the EA and the UA such that Pilar was, her term was only for 1 year instead of 2 years, which was what some of us thought. And so she is not a UA member anymore. If anyone has any questions, Ed and I are more than happy to talk about that after the meeting. The other issue that the executive committee addressed over the summer is that there were 4 vacancies on the University Hearing and Review Board. 4 students actually resigned, and so we temporarily appointed 4 people to fill those seats, and I left time in the business of the day to discuss that a little bit more in depth. Gina, did you have something you wanted to add? No? Okay. the Executive Committee. Codes and Judicial Committee, Mitch?
So we only have 3 UA members, 1 employee, and 1 student assembly member on the committee so far. So we're looking for all the other assemblies to bring their committees or bring their members to the committee. Also, I've talked to Connor Hodges, who was who previously worked as on one of the task forces trying to establish the Community Bill of Rights, and he was saying that last semester it didn't go that well because of a lot of schedule conflict. So I've been pushing that along, trying to make sure that they can all meet this semester, and they seem to be able to. They're going to try to have a meeting for that task force. So that's really the only thing that's been
said. Okay, thanks. Ulysses Smith is absent. Are there any other members of the Campus Welfare Committee that can report on Jordan?
Yeah, we're just working on finding a meeting time right now.
Okay. All right, then. And Campus Infrastructure Committee, Jeremy?
We are currently at 6 members. We have a handful of guests to fill. We've sort of just trying to get a hold of logistics, how we're going to communicate, and we've actually started our communication with last time.
Okay, very cool. So that.
Add to that that Jeremy's developed an Arbalist platform to talk about, and we have some participation in it already. So when he says we're in the process, we really are in the process.
Great. Does anyone have anything else on standing committees that they wanted to bring up? No? Okay, then let's move on to the business of the day. So I am actually going to give a presentation up there. So I'm going to do that. Do you mind sharing while I do that? Thanks. Yeah, I'm going to close.
You got it, okay.
Submitted a resolution.
actually do that on the assembly side. So, Resolution 7 was requesting information on the cost of carbon neutrality. That also was adopted. And the information that we promised in a report that's supposed to come out this fall. So we anticipate hearing a little bit more about how much that'll cost. Resolution 8 was expressing our condolences for President Garrett. Resolution 9 was the 2015-2016 Kansas Code of Conduct update. That was returned by the President. You can read part of his response. So he said that he doesn't know if we included adequate time for community input, and so that's something that I'm hoping we can address later this year. Or hopefully as soon as possible, so that we can update the code. I'll talk a little bit more about that when I go to the summary of recommendations. Resolution 10 was...
I have a question about this. Administrator, interim judicial administrator, if it was in the summer, didn't we already have a new judicial...
That's a really good point. So, Michelle, the new JA, which we'll get to the next slide, she took office June 22nd, and I believe UA exec received the notification from the president like June 9th, maybe. So this was just before her term ended and before Michelle took office. Does anyone else have any questions about that? Okay, cool. We can discuss that more later. Resolution 10 was just appointing the UHRB members. There have been a few vacancies. We'll discuss that later. And then Resolution 11 was the self-regulatory recognition about handing support to the AY for 2016 legislative assembly. So that should cover comprehensively the resolutions that we discussed last year. So here's an affiliated administrator update. So there are, in a sense, four administrators that are really that we work really closely with. Three of them are new. Well, one of them is new, and then Charlie Walcott, the university ombudsman, he's going into the second year of his 2-year term. So we have a new judicial administrator, Michelle Horvath. She joined us June 22nd, and we'll hear a report from her sometime this year, probably this fall, probably pretty soon, actually. We have a new judicial codes counselor, Bola Olafin, and he was the associate JA before he was the full JA. The way that the process works is you serve as the associate JA, and then you become the you serve as the associate JCC, then you become the full JCC when you're a senior. So we have Kendall Carr on deck. She's going to be the associate judicial code counselor, and then next year she'll be the official judicial code counselor. And then, like I said, same ombudsman. So now I'm going to basically discuss a summary of recommendations to the committees. I have two slides for executive committee and then one for each of the other committees. Basically, for the executive committee, I'm hoping to ensure that all of the other committees, all the standing committees are fully staffed by September 20th. And then, obviously, based on some of the disagreements that the UA had with the constituent assemblies, I think that it's really important, and I know I talked about this with Nate earlier, we need to update our charter and our bylaws to reflect common practices. One problem, for example, is in the UA charter under membership, it says that all members have 2-year staggered terms, but the UA, I'm sorry, that the SA and the GPSA appoint members for 1-year terms. So
question. I'm not as familiar with policy 4.1. Could you explain a little bit about what policy 4.1 is?
Yeah, so policy 4.1 basically is the policy on policies. So it's the policy that tells you what process you have to go through if you want to update any of the other policies. And so part of that policy is defining what a stakeholder is. And so the UA is considered a stakeholder under policy 6.4 as defined by policy 4.1. And the definition of stakeholder means we are supposed to be able to like review a draft of the policy before it goes into effect. So policy 4.1 defines stakeholder, policy 6.4, under policy 6.4, we are a stakeholder. Does that clarify? Great. Gina, did you have something you wanted to add?
I do. I think 4.1 is references university assemblies. It's the core assemblies, depending on which one is applicable to a particular policy.
Right. I'm referring to, I think it was Resolution 7 from academic year 2012, when we gave authority to Policy 6.4, over Policy 6.4, when we ceded that from the code, we said, make sure you consider us a stakeholder.
Okay.
So when the president accepted that, he's like, you are definitely a stakeholder.
Okay, thank you.
That was what I was referring to. Yeah. Marty?
I wonder if, not now, but in the future, brochures or emails, description, you can give us a little bit more and give everybody in it a little bit more sense of what it means to get presentations, what the value and importance of presentations from all of these different services on campus is. The value meaning, what is it that the UA can expect is possible from in response to the presentations. Obviously, we ask questions. You know, that's been my experience. You say, you know, what about this, what about that? But there may be something more that, we want to consider our responsibility in one another. Like with the Child Care Center, I know that there was representation on the Child Care Center Design Committee back 5 or 6 years ago, what I was sort of put up from the UA. And one of the people on it was actually involved in the previous Child Care Center program. And then others, University Council, but you might, at some point, the executive might think about what it is we can do in relation to any one of those. And then in the process, of course, the Transportation Committee is missing there. I know you say among others.
Oh, yeah, I'm just missing that one.
And the Planning Committee. Although you have master plan down.
Yeah.
And it's useful to have a little bit more sense of what we can, what kind of responsibilities we have and what we can make of that responsibility.
Yes.
Thank you.
That's a good point. Okay, so now I'm going to move on to campus culture. So the campus culture committee, there's a few leftover stuff from 2 years ago. One thing that we should follow up on is open course evaluation. That was really a campus culture committee, not last year, but 2 years ago. I think it's important to check in on that. Obviously, like you said, review communications and clinical child care programs. And then just general updating policies related to diversity and inclusion. Obviously, UBC is very good at that. And then just, working with Annette to ensure a healthy community. To the CJC, obviously looking at the code update that the president returned to us. Those are the three, I included the three kind of aspects of the code update.
first, I want to say thanks for putting all that together. That's really nice little presentation. One of the things, so I mentioned this to you before the meeting started, but I'll mention it now that we have everyone here. Is one of the things I like for us to do is I think these are all good recommendations, but we should really. I wonder when the last time was we did a self-evaluation of like the university assembly as a whole, and you know kind of how we function and how effectively we're really contributing to the dialogue or facilitating the dialogue on campus, and maybe there's things about ourselves and the university assembly that we could alter to make ourselves more efficient and just do a better job at whatever it is we're supposed to be doing. I think these are good recommendations, but I think we should you know, start with a little bit of an evaluation of just how we've been doing over the past few years to inform where we should go in the future.
I think Ed, do you want to call?
Sure, yeah. Marty?
I agree with you, and that's partly what I was saying as far as the presentations, because I know through the year we have, maybe last year, it wasn't in the reprise that we gave, but we have maybe 5 presentations by different divisions of the and so forth. But I think we can get primed a little bit for those to say, what are the issues involved here and what can we do about it if there is an issue? We might think a little bit about if there is not an issue, you know, whether or not presentation can be, you know, narrowed down and it won't take as much time in the meeting, because if there's not something that we really can participate in and have some valuable results from, even it is to affirm what's going on because we've been reassured by what we've heard. And the other thing is the code. That's a big deal to get a sense of what's right and wrong about the code right now, how it needs to be revised. And that's something we could spend as a body, not in deliberation here, but you know, separately, if we're presented with the issues early on, we can start thinking about them and get ready for. I think what's implied by President Rawlings's statement is that we didn't have something that's like the equivalent of what happened when we revised the code back 10 years ago, I guess it was, which was a whole set of campus conversations in Willard Straight Hall. And people turned out and said, we want this, we want that, this is wrong, this is right, you don't phrase this correctly, things of that sort. And if we have an idea of where revisions, the Code and Judicial Committee is thinking of revisions are appropriate, and we have them in front of us in email form or attachment form, something like that, we can think about them and bring them to the meeting, you know, with suggestions about what we do or don't want to do about it.
Yeah, Linda.
I just was curious, you mentioned there was formerly a finance committee, and I'd be curious to know what they did, what happened to them, why they dissolved, and, you know, what role they could potentially play in looking at the budget, because that seems like a huge issue here.
I'm just as curious as you are.
Mm-hmm.
I
okay.
Yeah, we all Office of Assemblies, or we get our own budget separate from the Office of Assemblies.
So ours comes from the university related contract. Is that
it's a budget that I allocate from the assemblies budget for the university assembly.
So in the past, aside from the food, which I assume that's coming for, one of the major expenditures we had was the cost of rooms when we held special meetings. When we were looking at modifications to the charter, we had a number of meetings, and they actually charged us for the rooms. So I don't know whether they charge us for this room.
Yep.
But what might be helpful is to actually see, if you're willing to do it, what you're charging to the university assembly budget, so we have some idea of, you know, what's the magnitude of it. No idea what it is. Maybe we're all supposed to be paid, we just don't know.
I just had a nice trip to the meeting.
Yeah, you know, maybe the chair needs to go and visit the chairs of other university assemblies in Tahiti, you know, and Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So what I would hope is that you could share with the assembly the sort of magnitude of the money and how we have been spending it.
No magnitude involved. It's actually a very modest budget that's meant primarily for food and room. Marty, as the vice chair of internal operations.
I was. I said now.
Yeah. Marty was it last year, and
right.
Actually Kevin Fitch is the vice chair for internal ops this year. I give budget reports with very clear allocations. All I do is show you what the expenditures are and deduct them accordingly. How you decide to spend your modest amount is ahead of you. Could just, and the student assembly does not do food. Really, you know, it's entirely up to the assembly. Left to little or no input, we're just going to continue doing the food in the room. But it's entirely up to the assembly and how they choose to spend money.
So, Gina, you had your hand up before.
I did, on something entirely different.
Okay.
Is it my turn?
Yes, it's your turn.
Okay. On the JCC, I just had a question. I know that the president appoints, and then this body approves that appointment. So with the new JCC, has that appointment actually been made?
Yes. I'm sorry, so these are two. BOLA has a office. He is the new judicial president.
So this body, as a formal resolution or something that we need to put into the public record, has
right.
to approve that appointment.
Right. So what we do, so the process, the way it works is we appoint for the next year. So we actually already appointed Kendall Carr to be the judicial code counselor next year. And so we appointed Bola to be the judicial code counselor for this year, 2 years ago. So the president has appointed, it's just staggered back one year. And then it's like passively implied that the current judicial code counselor will hire the one that we have appointed for 2 years from now to be the associate judicial code counselor.
I'm not sure I follow, but we can follow up after offline.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. You had it.
So Marty was next.
About that in particular, was that a summer appointment for judicial post counselor, the student assistant judicial post counselor?
No. Kendall was appointed in either April.
So we did appoint.
So they've just taken office. They've just taken effect.
It just doesn't take effect for another year.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. On the discussion about it, so we
should we proceed in terms of approving that?
Is there any dissent?
Thank you. What we have is a discussion of initial focus.
Could be an ad hoc group or the executive committee or someone could, how we should do that? How should we review the UA past actions in the last few years?
So, Marty?
Do you have an example of what you think might be coming out of any kind of conversation in this area?
You know, I don't know exactly. The place I'm kind of coming from is, and I'm not asking for something as extensive, but the Graduate Professional Student Assembly does kind of a needs assessment and a 5-year strategic plan called the Graduate Professional Community Initiative. And that's kind of, I like that a lot, because what it does is it takes a more holistic approach to how we operate within the shared governance community, instead of addressing each issue kind of piecemeal as it comes up or as we have like personal projects that come up, which I think is, you know, it's okay, but it's kind of an inefficient way to address things, and it skews it towards our personal kind of biases. And I'd like to, if we can, kind of think about how the university assembly fits more broadly, and how good of a job does it incorporate the voices of the constituent assemblies that staff it. That's I'm not sure if it's a question that we've even just asked ourselves in a while.
That's what?
How effective it brings in the voices of the other constituent assemblies. Like, is the faculty senate, when they're taking actions, are they thinking about, you know, what they can transition into the university assembly? I know the GPSA, sometimes we talk about that, but maybe not as much as we could. So.
Or did you want to respond?
If you look at some of the resolutions, they are ones that come out of committees, the welfare committee, the infrastructure committee, and some of them actually are parallel with resolutions that have been taken in the different constituent assemblies. And it seems to me like, well, that's why I was asking for an example of what's missing, because that seems to be the process that we work with fairly well. We have committees that deal with campus welfare. We have committees that deal with the facilities and infrastructure questions. And we pick up on some things that are coming directly out of the assemblies, but we also have our own take on them, and we debate them as a whole campus body. So that's why I was looking for something that's missing. Now, maybe if you call that a personal agenda, you know, you don't want to put it in here, but I'm not certain I see that. The other thing that came up, of course, was the list of all those bodies reporting to us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the university assembly came out of the climate of the 60s when it was a need to have more campus participation in different segments of the university life. The Gannett Health Center and all these other things, because it was felt that, you know, having more interplay with those different segments was important. And, you know, I guess the graduate student assemblies and the students, the undergraduate student assembly, they took their own slices. The university assembly took campus-wide, multiple constituency ones. And you saw some of those up there on the list. If we are able to get those more systematically, think about those in particular, as opposed to, you know, asking ourselves, what are we doing here, kind of question. But in other words, more like, what are we doing here about campus planning? What are we doing here about textbooks in their campus store or cost of textbooks? What are we doing here about? Those seem to me to be more, you know, maybe we can have a discussion and affirm that is our purpose, but I don't think we need to rethink what we are doing. That's my take on it.
Next, Ed?
Yeah. I definitely appreciate Nate's point here that it's good to rethink things from time to time, and we have changing membership, and people may not know the history, and so I know there's a lot for me to learn about the history of the University Assembly. But I also take Marty's point as well, and I'm particularly interested by his point, which I know a little bit of the history of, that the UA comes to some extent out of the campus unrest of the 60s in a general sense, that there were a number of issues that affected, and the UA particularly takes the ones that affect multiple constituencies across the university. These things were too important, and in some cases generated too many conflicting points of interest, right, to be left solely to the discretion of the administration alone or the faculty alone or something like that. So I would be in favor of a more targeted reexamination that says, okay, what are the areas of life at Cornell today that affect multiple constituencies where there are potentially these conflicts of interest where the UA could potentially play a useful role in helping to adjudicate those things. I'm not sure whether we'd want a committee to think about that, whether we'd want to have these discussions together. But I'm sure, you know, it's been a while since the 60s and even since some of the revisions of the charter of the UA. There may have been other things that have emerged since then. On the other hand, I think there are a lot of things that we are doing pretty well at the same time.
Jeremy?
And I can at least speak for an employee assembly that part of my interaction here is to take the information from here, bring it back to the EA, and we can have some discussion there over things that were done in the UA. And the reverse is true, too, is talking about speaking for my constituents as a representative of your specific set of staff constituents. If a topic comes up through those channels into the EA that is more of a central university-wide rather than just an employee-centric issue, that's where I think these issues are drawn into committees from these contacts that we all have within our constituent groups and within the various subgroups and universities. And we bring that up. That's how we get the most of the things to work on going forward as well. Our constituent groups might have to be primarily.
Charlie, could you
Yeah, I'm new, and I'm just trying to think of the body language here. But I have something very specific that this is the single best group to work on, which is that we have to review the academic calendar. When it was set up 4 years ago, part of the deal was it would be reviewed actually 3 years and 3 years out. So we're going to do that, and on that committee will be people from all the assemblies, a couple of faculty, registrar, and other high-level administrators. That is something that where there definitely is, I'll use the word collisions, but of interest between different constituencies. Now, for example, students increasingly need more time in the summer for jobs, right? So we need to get more complex final exams, students have to leave town and so on. People with each big courses have a certain view of things. The people who have kids in the public schools have a view of things. So this is a topic that we have to assemble this committee pretty quick, and my goal is by the end of September. And the way it works is that the provost makes the final call. We set up this committee, we make recommendations. The more force there's behind them, the more likely the provost would buy into that. But it's something that cuts across virtually every single person in this room has something to contribute to that discussion. So that's something that's very concrete, and I'd like to really use this group to talk about this stuff. We already, on the Dean of Faculty website, we have a page on this. I put up stuff from the committee that looked at this 4 years ago, and then about five or six things about what's wrong, what you hear is wrong with the current schedule. Like, for example, what's the point of a February break? It comes too early. There are a whole bunch of questions that various people bring up. So I'd love to use this group to talk about that. I mean, this committee will be assembled hopefully by the end of September. I'm going to talk to the Senate about the kinds of talent we need on that committee, and I would really love to use this group to get more insights and to accelerate the process. Well, I say accelerate doesn't mean cut corners. It just means get into it quickly and in a serious way. So is that what you mean by initial focus? Is that a sample? That's something that's concrete. I mean, I like concrete stuff, and that's really important. Okay, and it touches everything. For example, should we move? If you move graduation to a week earlier, all kinds of things can happen. But that's a huge proposal. Yeah, so anyway, that's what I'd like to do here. I think that's a pretty specific initial focus.
All right. Thank you for that. Does anyone else have anything that they want to bring up or discuss in terms of the initial focus? Ellis?
Well, I think it's important to remember that the university assembly traditionally operates at two levels. First, there's aspirational level, Okay, so things like carbon neutrality in 2035. That's aspirational, but a lot of the work that we've done, particularly the CJC, has been reactive and not proactive. Okay. The JA has come to us, or some constituency comes, the dean of faculty comes and lays something in front of us. Okay. And you can't necessarily predict what's going to happen. You know, somebody goes on Hope Plaza, there's an altercation, next thing you know, we're spending five meetings discussing whether the code deals with that. So, you know, I think it's important to realize that we have to allow time for both of those things, particularly in the committees.
That's a good point.
So I agree. So for, I guess, you know, if you were to, if you need all the input that you have, but ultimately you're going to find that a lot of faculty will jump up and say it's the Senate that should decide for faculty, but the academic calendar is, and they'll take input from other people, but ultimately they want the vote if anybody says different.
Well, I mean, that's I've heard, you know, that the I was an ordinary faculty member back in those days. I heard in talking to people that, you know, the faculty pretty much called the shots. And what I would like to see is but you have to muster strong arguments, you know, from this group to be more symmetry among the different groups.
That's great. Yeah,
I agree.
So is there anyone else on the first, or that would like to get on the first speaker's list? Because we've exhausted it. Okay.
What does that mean?
So if you want to, so everyone gets to speak once before anyone gets to speak twice. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure, because we've exhausted the first speakers list, that everyone has the opportunity to bring something up. Oh,
I have something.
Interesting to say.
Yeah, I just am curious, noting that, you know, some of the things that the UA has done in the past are aspirational. I'd kind of be curious to know, over the course of the history, what are some of the aspirational resolutions that this body has passed, not having any experience with it. And so, is there some kind of record of that? Is there?
Yeah. So
okay.
There is the Office of the Assemblies keeps a really robust Assemblies dashboard where you can actually, like, review all the past actions.
Okay.
I don't know exactly how many years back it goes, and it depends on the assembly, but I've seen it go as far back as, like, 2000, so, or around there. So you know, if you want to spend a few evenings reviewing.
It just seems like it would tie into
yeah.
what you're saying, you know, if you look at, you know, what are some of the things we could proactively do rather than reactively attend to. It might be good to know in the past what types of resolutions has this body passed. I mean, it might be useful.
Brian?
Yeah, I was just going to say we have records that go back to when the Assemblies started.
Right.
Our paper, but we have books that go back to, I think, like 69. And you'll actually see that the things should come up over and over and
over
and
over.
Over,
that's
again,
what I was,
so
yeah.
Feel free to come take a look.
So, anyone else on the first speaker's list? Okay, that's exhausted. Nate?
Yeah, and I just want to say that's kind of exactly my point with the review thing is about it's having that balance. I don't like the idea of even of UA being, you know, purely reactionary. I respect that we need to have time for that, obviously, but I feel like we should definitely have kind of some proactive plan that's more than, you know, maybe just topical. But that's all.
Marty?
Just putting in a word, I'm more eager for a progressive than a reactionary to it.
Okay. So does anyone else have any concluding thoughts on our initial focus for the year? No? Okay. So then let's move into a discussion on the UHRB vacancies. So, and I think that, you know, it's important that we engage with the office in this capacity. Basically, I just thought I would bring up, like, we did make four appointments over the summer on behalf of the UA, and per the campus code of conduct, if we ever do that, we have to bring it up to the UA. So this is us bringing it up to the UA to let you know that we made four interim appointments, and I thought that I would give everyone an opportunity to weigh in. You know, like, the four people that we appointed were the next four highest rank, like, average ranked members or applicants on the who applied to be on the UHRB. So those were the people that we ended up appointing. So that's the information that I have. Ed?
I'm just wondering if there's anybody in the room that would profit from a brief description or translation of what you just said.
Okay. So
yeah.
Most, I don't know how many people here don't
have to be updated.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So the university assembly staffs the university hearing and review boards, which are composed of, I believe it's, the current numbers are 25 students, 10 faculty and 10 employees, is that, I don't know, is that correct, or do I have this? She's looking it up.
15 and 15,
there we go, perfect. And of the students, it's irrelevant whether or not they're undergraduates or graduates, it's considered one group. The hearing boards basically review decisions of the judicial administrator, so someone who finds themselves in the JA's office can basically appeal that to a hearing board. The hearing board is composed of 3 randomly selected individuals from the hearing board pool, which consists of students and faculty and staff, and they basically review the decision of the judicial administrator. So it provides kind of an institutional check. That is the body to which we appoint members, and there are 4 student vacancies, and we have filled those vacancies with temporary interim appointments. Did that answer stuff?
Anybody have questions?
Becca?
Do we have the names of these students? I have their names.
I haven't written them out. So the reason I chose not to reveal them out loud is if we ended up not doing it, I wouldn't want people to know that they applied and then weren't confirmed. So we don't publicly announce these people applied and we rejected them. But we do publicly announce who applied. So I wanted to keep that kind of on the down. So do you guys want the names? Because we can give you the we can give you the names if
I
you
don't
want
think it matters
to
as
see
long
them.
As you're qualified.
Okay. Jordan?
Just clarifying, we're just approving or we're just recognizing that we know you made the appointment.
That's basic. I mean, essentially that's what happened. Yeah.
Do you need a motion on this or is this just an
I mean if you want to close discussion on this you can motion to close discussion on the UHRB vacancies. Yeah, Gina, did you want to add something?
My question is sort of what Jordan's for. I wasn't quite sure if the discussion is leading to having this body affirm the individual four names or just to affirm that the exec committee acted this summer to appoint these 4. I'm not quite sure yet.
Yeah, and I think, it's deliberately ambiguous, maybe for worse, because you guys should decide, do you want to confirm the next 4 highest ranking people, or do you want to use some alternate method? That's for you guys to decide. That's why I have it listed under discussion. Mitch, did you have something you wanted to add first? Okay, Marty?
These are appointments that were made.
Yes.
And people were informed?
Have they been informed yet?
So we haven't yet because they have to attend today's training session in order to serve on the board, and they have a schedule, and they already missed the 4th that they're on schedule, so we're waiting for them to schedule the 4th one or the extra 5th one before, so we can let them know if they're trying to have to go to that training.
But as far as the office is concerned, we have received the 4 names.
Okay.
Based on that question, I want to make a motion that we accept the executive committee's decision this summer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's a second. Is there any dissent to that motion? All right. Seeing none, I'm going to ask that we approve those interim appointments as permanent by unanimous consent. All right. So approved. Okay. Glad we got through that. That was a tough one. Okay. So next on the agenda is the Office of the Assembly's presentation. Thank you.
So in years past, I understand that the practice was to do an orientation for all assembly members. And we did that, I'm going into finishing my third year here. This year we decided to do things a little differently and sort of tailor the orientation to each assembly, and we did this summer with the employee assembly and had really good response. And so I appreciate the time on the agenda today to present to you. And really, it's an opportunity to go through a little bit of the history of the assemblies, some things about processes, what we do in the office, and so as we talked a little bit about, Marty's mentioned that the history of the assemblies, way back before the modern assemblies came into being, the Board of Trustees had transferred responsibility for all non-academic matters to the president. And before that, the faculty had actually been in charge of all academic and non-academic policies for the university. And then, as we mentioned here, the roots of the roots in campus governance came about in the 1969 Willis Strait event, not just the campus climate, but the national climate at the time. There were major overhauls in the assemblies in the 70s and early 80s. And each time it winnowed down the focus of the university assembly, which I think has been quite rightly in these discussions. There are the constituent assembly, three of them, and then the faculty senate, and then the university assembly takes up issues that affect the campus as a whole, or a major section of the campus. This is just an overview of each of the different assemblies. We have the university assembly with all the constituencies, obviously, and the others. It's important to note that the GPSA has representation and representatives in Geneva and at Cornell Tech. And as Cornell Tech evolves, I'm glad that the GPSA and its leadership and the grad school are in close communication with this, because it's important to make sure that even if they establish their own campus governance, that there's a liaison tie to that. Also, the employee assembly does have a representative, a designated seat for a Geneva rep. And the legislative authority for all of the assemblies is delegated from the president, but it's delegated and not transferred. And this is where we kind of bump sometimes is in issues of perceived versus actual authority. So that these authorities that the assemblies have, which is different than the faculty senate, are advisory. And the assemblies make recommendations, which were reviewed by the president in consultation with the senior staff. And it's actually important in higher ed as a whole, and certainly within our peer institutions. Cornell takes shared governance very, very seriously. The president will come to the meetings of each of the assemblies. Senior leadership is very involved. We'll get the provost to attend, depending on what the issues are. But it's advisory taken to heart. So I think it is, again, the discussion taking place. This is, whatever the issues are, they will be heard. Fundamental authorities of the assemblies are, again, for the the constituent assemblies, they're mandated to represent the constituent interests and bring issues of concern to the university leadership. Again, that legislative authority subject to the approval by the president. And also, each assembly has staffing authority to appoint constituent representatives in the assemblies and the committee. The financial authority to establish an administrative budget for the expenditures. I'm happy to. Modest as that budget is, it's yours to spend, or to dictate how to spend. You all know this, the legislative authority of each of the assemblies. The UA has the campus code of conduct, staffing for the university hearing and review board, transportation, planning, and each of the other assemblies as well. I'm going to get into this just very briefly, since April did such a great job sort of leading up to it. Yeah, each assembly has a charter, which is permanent, basic, and in each of the assemblies, the president has to approve any charter changes, the president of the university. The assemblies also have bylaws, which are permanent. They do persist from year to year. They're detailed rules. They do not need presidential approval, but there are different, usually, the approval mechanisms and the way they're treated are different with each assembly. Standing rules, some assemblies have them, some don't. They're year-to-year procedures. Robert's rules, again, I have several copies of this one that Gabriel has, if anybody wants to take a look at it. We also have Robert's rules for dummies, in case you don't want the big thick ones. We take those very seriously. In the Office of Assemblies, we sort of, it's taken me 2.5 years to try and find a way to tell my mother what it is that I do, and so finally you may have heard me say, we're the exchequer of the process and the keeper of the record. So the process is very important. Process is derived largely from your governing documents. Where that is silent, we go to Robert's rules, and certainly university policy plays into that as well, and law. Robert's rules, where the governing documents don't specify something, we do go to Robert's rules. So that's why, it's very important to at least know that the relevant to how this project progresses and proceeds. This is just one of my favorite quotes. The application of parliamentary law is the best method yet devised to enable assemblies of any size, with due regard for every member's opinion, to arrive at the general will on the maximum number of questions of varying complexity in a minimum amount of time, and under all kinds of internal climate, ranging from total harmony to hardened or impassioned division of opinion. And that's actually in our office. Resolutions, this is just, again, the actions of the assembly are the resolutions. These are the actions that we post on the dashboard. Any action, even if it's not going to go to the president, it doesn't become part of the record unless it's actually a resolution. So folks who are familiar with the process, bear with me. I'm just going to go through it very quickly. From concept to the floor, and I think, Nate, to your question is, however the concepts or the issues come up, it's important to make sure that you, as we've said, there's probably a legislative history on there. They are very cyclical. We've done a lot of digging into the archives. Hard to find something that hasn't come up before. Look there, find out what the resolution was, perhaps even get some guidance on how to make your case. And then this next one, the soliciting feedback from the UA members and constituent assemblies is also very important, particularly here. You have representatives from the assemblies, these reps can go back to the constituent assemblies, or if it's your resolution, go to that assembly. Try to generate as much interest and feedback so that when you're developing a resolution, you've got a sense of how the different parties and stakeholders feel about it. And then solicit feedback from your written resolution, from administrators, assembly members, committee members, and the community. We have a mechanism on the dashboard to enable community feedback. Typically, it's in response to a resolution or something that's an action. There's probably some technical way we could solve that if you're trying to get referendum. But again, the community feedback is an important part of the process. Remember that you represent people. Everybody from a constituent assembly is here by virtue of a representation. You are elected or appointed, and you represent people. Again, the resolutions, the whereas clauses. I'll be happy to share this up on the website as well. These are just the steps, what each clause means and what it needs to have in order to sort of, as you develop your resolution. The resolution actually are the resolve clauses. That's what that means. You have all the whereas stuff, which is very important. The resolution is actually the resolve clauses. The administrative budget, each assembly, the university allocates funds for each assembly. The student assembly and the graduate and professional student assembly get theirs by virtue of the student activity fee. The EA and the UA get their funds from the university relations budget, which I manage. And the UA leadership can develop a budget proposal. I'm happy to do that with you. We've set up, Gabriel, in touch with Kevin to set up a meeting to do just that. Then the assembly adopts the budget, and then we just manage that according to how you set it up. the Office of the Assembly, which is sort of current and where we're going, was established to provide administrative support and financial oversight. But a fundamental mission of what we do, what I do, is engage constituencies across campus and increase the participation in shared governance process. Meaning shared governance writ large. I would say I didn't know anything about the Assembly before I took the job. Everybody on this campus has representation. Most people don't know it. And you sort of feel like it's okay if you choose to not participate, but you should know that you have representation. And that's sort of been our driving goal and what we aim for. We also maintain the channels and processes for the members' continuous involvement in the decision-making processes of the university. So if there's somebody you're trying to reach or get information from, we make sure that we have those channels available to Assembly members, leadership, somebody working on a resolution, whatever it may be. So to clarify some of the questions that we received, the Office of the Assemblies is a unit of the Division of University Relations. We provide and maintain a list, tool, template, and record for all assemblies, committees, and members. And I know that there's the communications that are either using the lists or not using lists. Part of it may be because it's a hassle to use lists when we don't know who's on them. We ask you to please use the lists. That's actually our job, is to maintain the record. This ensures that all the right people are receiving communication. It ensures the transparency, and again, maintain control of record. And by virtue of my role as the director of the Office of the Assembly, I actually own about 173 lists. We have them for committees, we have them for assemblies, we have them for steering groups, individual committees. It's that many, and I'm on them by virtue of owning them. I also appoint Brian, who has a very particular, unique hat in the Office of the Assemblies right now. Brian is also very technically oriented, can help me as we're in this interim phase with our website to make sure, again, that we have the tools that you need, that we're supporting well so that you can do the work that you need to do. Communicate well with the people you need to communicate with, and that the record is intact. The committee chairs, through the dashboard, and we've been in touch with committee chairs, can also update their lists directly through the dashboard. So that's not something that we have to do. We step out of, again, trying to make sure that you've got agility and access to do the things that you need to do. We also hire and provide a clerk to take, transcribe, and post the minutes through the assembly. Our great clerk for the University Assembly is Vishal Dayal, a fourth-year senior in animal science. We're very glad that Vishal came back this year. We have clerks for all of the assemblies. We also have a fifth clerk that we're hiring to sort of act as a webmaster, since a lot of our tools are web-based. We conduct the election. We solicit candidates for the UHRB and manage the selection process in concert with the University Assembly, the CJC, the Dean of Faculty, and the Office of the Judicial Administrator. We provide advisement on programming and potential means of resolution to issues of concern. And this, again, it sort of goes with the next one, coordinating communication between assemblies. If there's an issue that needs the other part of the conversation, we're happy to make sure that the right people show up so you can have that conversation. And also between the assemblies. I go to all the assembly meetings and the CJC meetings, again, by virtue of my role in making sure that I'm not even making sure, it's just part of my job. So I'm at all of these meetings and can help with those communications. We also act as a liaison with administrators and community members on issues of concern before the assembly. Again, there's that public comment, or even if you're trying to engage through the Office of Community Relations, those are my colleagues in our division, their office is also right across the hall. So we can set up forum for that, whether it's with students, community members, other groups on campus. My boss is the Vice President of University Relations, Joel Molina. New this year, I've asked him to meet monthly with the UA exec, much like the other constituent assemblies meet with their administrative leader, their administrative contact. So Joel has made himself available to meet with the UA exec as a means of regular communication, so that the exec, the university assembly, has direct and regular contact with their administrative vice president. So I'll be working with you all to set that up as a monthly recurring meeting. We'll also host the monthly leadership breakfast, which I organize, and it's as some of you may have attended. We had our first one last week. Hopefully some of you may attend in the future as maybe filling in a role. This is an opportunity for the three most senior leaders of each of the assemblies. So the UA gets four. The community elected trustees, the dean and associate dean of faculty. And we have casual off-the-record meetings with the leadership of the university, usually on matters that are pretty high level. So it's a good way to close the doors and actually have a conversation about some matters that are really relevant to the community and to the, that may be coming before the city administration as well. So website and IT updates. Brian, you want to talk a little bit about that? For some of you that are returning members, this is we're still in the middle of a website rebuild. We actually did hire and are moving along quite swiftly. We just saw wireframes last week for the project. So we did hire an outside firm to help us. This is it's quite a complex project. So what the assemblies does is pretty esoteric and pretty deep, and it affects a lot of people. And there's integrity and all sorts of integration involved. So Brian's going to talk to you about that.
So we have a pretty tough job in terms of keeping track of all of the data that's associated with the assembly, and there's a lot of data coming up. So our the best way we know how to do it is through this dashboard, which is kind of the in-between type thing that we developed in how to manage all this information. And when we go live with our new website at some point in the future, it'll be similar but better. So you can see here, you can access all the information associated with the University Assembly, just by going to the Assembly drop-down and clicking Assembly. And kind of one of the challenges of working with this type of information is it changes every academic year, each academic year resets. So right now the dashboard is very focused on the current academic year. And if you wanted to go back in time and find something out that happened in the past, I just typed in code of conduct into the search bar, and I'm getting like lots of resolutions about the code of conduct. So there's tons and tons of information to look at if you're trying to do research about something. On the dashboard, we have complete data about resolutions from 2014 onwards. That's when we started this. And we also have limited data in the dashboard from 2006 onwards. Before, if you want more complete information, have to use our old book website, which is just assembly.cornell.edu. I should add this is assembly.cornell.edu/dash. And for here, you can find all sorts of information going back as far as we have the ability to go. So this the UA record for here is our 2003. And then if you want something, if you're looking for information about something that's before that time, we probably have it in our archives just in paper form. So from the office. I also just wanted to show you really quickly that if you pull up a specific resolution, you can see all sorts of information about it. We published all the correspondence between the chair of the assembly and the president,
I'll just add one more thing before I take questions, Marie, is we also have we've sort of reorganized our space. We're at 109 Day Hall. The door is always open. But we also have a small little conference room, which is great for small meetings. It seats about 6 people, which you can fit 8 people if you need. The EA exec meets there regularly. The PWC met there regularly last year. Used quite frequently for assembly matters. If you need a small space, also send an email to assembly at cornell.edu. And we're here for you. It's a tight choreography once all the assemblies get going to make sure that we can meet all of your needs. So the more communication we have in advance of something that you need is always better, but we try to be responsive and as much help as we can in those times that do come up when there is no time. So, again, just be in touch frequently and often.
It seems like we have a few people who have some questions, so there's a little bit of a speakers list.
Okay.
You're okay answering some questions? Okay, great. Mitch?
So I had a lot of discussions with Professor Lee Sanders about like the false exchange governance, like the 1955 thing. That's fascinating. So like, can you elaborate a little bit more on how like the faculty control all everything about the university?
It wasn't unusual from what I understand. And again, I'm going back to our archives, which are through a particular lens, that the original documents actually are the faculty deciding your salary or anybody's salary. Deciding staff members' days off. It was the faculty were the body that made those decisions. And then it was much later in our modern times, at least, where those responsibilities and authorities were transferred by our board of trustees to the president. I have more in the office. I'm happy to share with you.
Sounds cool.
Books. Yeah.
Great.
So my question is, during the study of the campus strategy committee, what we do, the assembly update our information, so I logged in, and then mine was really to show my phone number 00000, but there's no way to update that. There was a link that I'm not sure.
I think if you go to, and possibly your phone number is, hopefully this should look directly in a way that you want to put over. I think if you click here, update your profile, it should show you your phone number there.
Okay. Give that a try.
One of the things that we had to do with this, again, because the information is public to our community, but also for things like the public comment, it's shibboleth protected. So that means it's NetID authenticated. So even though Brian actually built this with a third-party website, it is Cornell branded and secure. So all of those are things that, again, we take very seriously and make sure that we're in compliance both with how we look and what we do.
Nate?
Yeah, my question was, is there an update on applications for external committee? How's that come?
Yeah, so we can really add any entity we'd like to the dashboard and accept applications for it. It's just a matter of letting us know what and when, and then we'll try to do it as quickly as we can. We based it on the more or less based on who can see what committee based on the university status of the directory, but sometimes it's incorrect and sometimes it's a lot more than one, and there's also the decision to address the city in another entity. So also one thing. But if you tell us what you want to do, I'll try my hardest to make it work.
Does anyone else have any questions? Okay. Thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you.
They're getting the technology squared away. We don't have any late additions to the agenda, but does anyone have anything that they specifically would like to bring up at this point? No? Okay. Then with that, I'm going to ask for a motion to adjourn. All right. Just a second. And I'm going to ask that be approved by unanimous consent. Okay. Then with that, the meeting is adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.